Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. The Doug Gottlieb Show comes to you live from the City of Angels. Pat Forty will be our guest in 25 minutes. Then, long talk with John Middlecoff. Three and Out is the podcast, and he's a former NFL scout. Chris Mannix will join us from inside the bubble. We got a bunch to get to. Portland Trailblazers survived the Brooklyn Nets, so they advance to the play-in game where they'll take on the Memphis Grizzlies for the right to take on the LA Lakers, and the Lakers so desperately want the Memphis Grizzlies to win, not the Blazers to win. We'll discuss that upcoming. We are watching some hoops that's still being played. For what reason, we're not really sure. Denver taking on Toronto. But Toronto just kind of keeps on keeping on doing their thing. All right, let's get to this part of what I think is fascinating. Last night was another kind of coordinating moment for Damian Lillard. He has 41 points. He gets credit with a stop late. And the Trailblazers, behind his exploits, go from being what would have been the last team out to suddenly the most dangerous team that the Lakers don't want to see, right? That's actually happened. But I think on the other side is where it gets more interesting. The Brooklyn Nets will play in the playoffs, yet they were nearly not playing for anything last night. And while not playing for anything, they seemed like they were playing for everything. The Nets are 35-37 in total on the year. Remember, they've done it here in the bubble without not just Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, but Spencer Dinwiddie, DeAndre Jordan. Like it feels like you name it. Can you name their starting lineup in the bubble? Garrett Temple, Caris LeVert, who was spectacular last night, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, and Redion Kurix, who no one had ever heard of. He's just 22 years old from Latvia, right? I mean, they're just throwing dudes in there. Tyler Johnson had been bought out earlier this year. He had a tremendous game last night with 16. So I think what we're setting ourselves up for is next year is going to be fascinating in terms of the narrative of really two different all-time great players. All-time greats. See, I think that the Warriors will be back. I don't know. And I wonder whether or not the Warriors will ever be able to get to the heights they were able to get to previously, and if Kevin Durant's greatness will be recognized if they do get back there. But the Warriors' legacy is pretty much set because they won 73 games and a title, not in the same year, a title before Kevin Durant arrived. Kevin Durant's legacy, on the other hand, is not set. He left Oklahoma City after they had succumbed, having a 3-1 lead. Right. He goes to the Warriors, where they win two titles, and then because of injury, don't win one last year. But it felt like he was icing on top of an already wonderful cake. He was the cherry on top. I believe he was more needed. I believe they wouldn't have won either of those two titles without him. I believe that he was the best player in the league during those 2 years, but that isn't what the narrative is. Kyrie Irving is a spectacular, once-in-a-generation talent. But as Colin pointed out earlier today, and I would agree with, hey, Duke was good with him, was good without him, and when they came back, it wasn't as much fun, and they lost early in the NCAA tournament. He didn't win anything in Cleveland until LeBron arrived. And then after winning a title, even LeBron soured on him and wanted to move on from him. He goes to Boston, and while injured, the team plays better than it does when he comes back. And now in Brooklyn, it's much the same situation. Next year is going to be a defining season for both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant, by my estimation, has solidified himself as one of the all-time greats. He led the league in scoring multiple times. He's been the finals MVP two different times. He's been the league's MVP, and he's seen as the unguardable weapon, a seven-footer who can roam around and play every position, and now he's become a very good weapon defensively. Big shots and big moments, specifically when guarded 2 years in a row by LeBron James, he stared him down and took him when it actually mattered. But he's still seen as the guy who's chasing the dream scenario, who's never happy, who was only icing on top of the cake. He wasn't the flower that actually made the cake. He took the easy way out. It was a punk move, right? Have you heard people say this before? Now he goes to Brooklyn, where it's not the Knicks, so there's not the pressure. It's with Kyrie, so he's not the only guy, etc., etc., etc. Kyrie Irving is the guy who, in spite of the fact that he made the big shot for the Cavs against the Warriors, he carried the team offensively at times when LeBron could not. He was, in fact, the most talented Boston Celtic, and a lot of what happened was not actually even his fault, was more circumstances in that the year before, they had had an easier draw and surprised some people and got to the finals where ultimately they got dismantled. They were a better team without better wins in the playoffs. But Kyrie and KD won't be able to fall back on, hey, remember when I won with the Cavs? Remember when I won with the Warriors? We've all seen not just how much fun, but how good the Nets actually are without them, how they play without them. And if the two of them stop everything, play ISO ball, and the results are not as much fun or not as good at the top, then you'll start to ask yourself, why the hell do they have these guys? It was more fun. It was better without them, which is what Boston has found out. And essentially what LeBron really kind of got down to. I think last night, though, it was another kind of coronating moment for Damian Lillard. It begins the process of putting an immense, enormous amount of pressure on both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving next year. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What a show we got for you. I want to get to what LeBron has achieved this year and why I'm not sure. I actually think it's not a good thing for the Lakers. We got more discussion on the real reason Brady wanted to leave New England. And I think there's an NBA coach who won't get much sympathy if, in fact, he loses his job after the bubble bursts. But he's actually done an amazing job, not just this year, but the past couple of years. And he'll be maligned when he's gone. But coming up next, LeBron had an achievement in his career in which he has not obtained or achieved at any other time. Could it be bad news for the Lakers? I'll tell you next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So LeBron James led the NBA in assists. First time in his career he's led the NBA in that statistical category. Should be pointed out that, Wilt Chamberlain once led the NBA in assists. Right. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was Wilt late in his career, you know, kind of like LeBron trying to prove a point. Part of it is that both they're not the same athletes they used to be, but still kind of physically dominant. And because they demanded that amount of attention, the assists were there. You can also play for assists. Like, I love to tell the story that a really close friend named Joe Crispin. Right. And Joe Crispin used to play for the Phoenix Suns. And I'd never forget, I went to see him play with the Suns. I was playing in the ABA at the time. And Joe is now, a Division III coach in Jersey. He's like, watch Stephon play. It's really amazing. He'll end up with 20 and 8. The 20 don't help us win. The 8 don't actually make anybody better. I was like, well, how does he get 8 assists? He's like, just watch. He plays for assists. It's like the first quarter, he'll try and get a couple layups to start the game when nobody's ready. And then he'll just play for assists till he gets his 7, 8, 9 assists, and then he'll try and score the rest of the game so he ends up with 20 and 8 and doesn't have to think about it. But the fatal flaw to how LeBron not only has always played, but is especially playing this year, which is everything goes through him. Right? Everything goes through him. And when everything goes through him, and one, his teammates can't make shots, or two, he's not good enough, or maybe most importantly, like, if you can't do everything and create every shot for every other guy, that's the flaw in this team. Now, I will point out that while that's the flaw, the best part of the team in terms of how it's constructed is they're very good defensively. And defense does travel, and defense will carry you through some really ugly spots on offense. You know, when your offense gets stale, if you can stop people, theoretically, that's when you can win championships. What people forget is that until their third championship, second with Kevin Durant, until their third championship, analytically, the Warriors for three consecutive years were the best defensive team in the NBA. Best defensive team in the NBA. And so everybody goes falls in love with the three-pointers and all the other great stuff they did, but they also they missed or forgot that they were great defensively. So I do think the Lakers, in terms of their construction as a defense-first team, is phenomenal, but one of the reasons that LeBron's teams are always bad when he's out, one of the reasons they're always worse when he leaves, is the same reason that it feels like the Lakers are flawed. He is literally the only one who is allowed to or can create a shot for another teammate on their roster. And one, when you don't have that many shot makers, and two, when he's not at the peak of his powers, and three, when it's one guy doing all of that, it limits you.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Did you guys see the story out of Oregon State? You see the story, Dan Beyer? This is
no.
Really interesting. Okay, so Oregon State's president did an interview where he said that they may have to borrow money, a 30-year bond, because of the massive shortfall within their budget. Like, whoo. That is a big one. Like,
yeah.
Like we're going to have to start borrowing. And I think what's interesting is, I guess when people have said college football is broken or college athletics is broken, they were operating under the assumption that it was broken because teams couldn't get along in terms of who was doing what, and there's no kind of uniformity to it, number of non-conference games. And some believe, you know, that college athletes should be paid or compensated more or given name and likeness, which appears to be in the process. I don't think that's – I do think that we're looking at college football – we're looking at college football being broken or college athletics being broken, but in a completely different way. It is so dependent upon the money making of college football that when that goes away, it becomes an absolute house of cards. And that part is in fact broken.
You know, Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, the athletic director and obviously the former longtime football coach, was saying, you know, that the athletic department could lose $100 million.
Yes.
And to season ticket holders, Wisconsin offered a couple of different options on what they wanted to do with their season tickets. And option A was, if you'd like to take your season tickets that you had and paid for and donate it to the athletic department, you can. You can B, move that forward to the 2021 season, or C, get your money back. Everybody's picking B and C. A local TV station said, you know, a majority of the people were not choosing to donate that money to the athletic department. Not that it would be a huge amount, but, you know, for the people that are buying those tickets as well.
Well, there's also usually a donation that you have to have whenever you buy season tickets, usually you have to make a donation. So it's like a donation on top of, look, they're not only going to lose the revenue and the TV revenue and the gate revenue. And I've heard the gate revenue, when that's off, you know, is between 30% to 45% of their revenue. The 45% is in those bigger places, the Neyland Stadiums at Tennessee. Obviously, they're going to play right now. The Big House, you know, 100,000 mm-hmm. seats. You know, you do the math. If the average ticket is $100, and I actually think it's far more than that, but it's probably $200. That's, you know, $1 million just by selling seats with nothing else, no parking, know nothing. But that's not, that also pales in comparison to the other part of college football, which is the fundraising aspect to it. You know, there's a fundraising aspect to it where that's what college football is used for. The big donors go to their skybox. First, they go to come out to our tailgate, meet the athletes, meet other donors, feel good about parking your special parking spot. President comes by and schmoozes. Then you go up to your box. Same exact thing. Maybe you get a chance to see the athletes before when they're walking out, or you get on the field, right? And then they hit you up for the big donation. That's where the school's money comes from, not just athletic department money comes from. Right. Jim Boeheim was telling that us at the Final Four of that a couple years ago. Do we make money? Heck yeah, we do. But then we fundraise and then we spend all the money on all of the other sports. Right. And the athletic department breaks even. Now, can they tighten their belt? Absolutely. Absolutely. They can tighten their belt and they are tightening their belt. But this is the flaw in the construction is it's so incredibly based upon one moneymaker. And they're not getting the overall funding that they used to get from the state or from the school. So anyway, Pat Forty joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Pat, I was talking about the flaw in college football. Everyone's talking about conferences not agreeing, uniformity, no commissioner, something, name and image and likeness. The flaw in this whole thing is the whole system works based upon the revenue that's generated from the 6 or 7 Saturday home games, as well as the TV contracts that go with all the games. And I feel like, you know, maybe they're too big to fail, but man, there's going to be some crazy stuff and crazy cuts going on if we don't have any college football. And if the conferences that are definitely not going to have it are really going to be hurt if there is college football.
Oh, big time. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You know, it's funny. I talked to a Power 5 AD this morning who he insisted that it's going to be bad even if they get, you know, most of their TV revenue. Because as you alluded to, there's also the piece of ticket sales and all game day revenue that they just will not get, you know, even a fraction of at best. It's going to be really bad. And if there's no football at all, it's, you know, somewhat catastrophic. There will be even big time programs will be cutting sports, probably multiple sports. And the ones that are further down the list, you know, the Conference USAs, the Mid-American conferences, the ones that missed out on the million-dollar paydays for road games, that sort of thing, they're probably, you know, that are already operating on a shoestring budget, they're going to be cutting even more.
Yeah, it's really going to be sad when you know, we're already seeing some sadness. Okay, where are we with the three conferences that are playing? How sure are we that the Big 12, ACC, and SEC are going forward?
You know, I really think it's day-to-day, you know, I mean, every day they can get to practice and have a practice and not have something blow up, not have, you know, an outbreak of the virus, not have a bunch of players say we're not practicing or something like that is a small victory. But it also means that every single day you have a big loss that could happen that ends everything. So, you know, it seems to me that it's very tenuous. I asked one AD yesterday, I said, so full speed ahead? And he said, I wouldn't say that. He said, it's cautiously moving forward a step at a time.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What is it? What happens to the Big Ten and Pac-12 if they don't play and everybody else does?
You know, very interesting. I think if we get to mid-season and it's still working and those other conferences are playing, yeah, it's going to be bad for them. I don't think it's catastrophic. I don't think it's one of those things where, oh, no recruits are going to go because they don't care about football or anything like that. But it will hurt them, obviously, in the pocketbook. It will hurt them in terms of prestige and relevance. And then the bigger question going forward, and I don't have an answer to this, is, you know, what's the impact on relations between these conferences, and is there still going to be a quote-unquote Power Five? Are we looking at three conferences over here and two others over there, and we even further kind of diminish the leadership group of a very poorly led enterprise.
You have kids that are swimmers in college. If your kids were football players in college, would you encourage them to play?
Oh, it's a good question. I hadn't really thought of it. I mean, swimming is the NCAA is categorized as a low risk sport. It's a winter sport. Stanford, where my daughter is, they've already killed off their first semester, so they won't have their first quarter. They won't have any meets until second semester. It's going to be a bad situation regardless, but I would say in her environment, go for it. And now football, I don't know. I would need a lot of assurance. I would need to hear from all the medical experts. Tell me, you know, how you're going to handle testing and contact tracing and quarantining, and then tell me what you know about myocarditis. How big is the issue? How big is the threat? What do you do if you see it? All those sorts of things. I would have a lot more trepidation if they were football players than swimmers.
I think the point that Trevor Lawrence makes is a really good one, in that we operate in this belief that if you're not on a college campus, you're safe at home. But the reality is you're actually less safe at home, right? You can still have COVID and then myocarditis. I guess you wouldn't be working out is the theory, right? And you wouldn't be working out under the watchful eye, and you be able to have your heart monitored and know if you have it if you're on campus, where you don't know if you have it if you're not on campus.
Yeah, I mean, look, Trevor Lawrence makes a lot of good points. Very impressive young man. But the one thing that the problem with that whole logic is nobody's saying the players have to go home. They're going to stay on campus. They're going to stay within the testing protocol of their team. They're going to still be able to use their facilities. They're going to still have access to the team positions. They're going to have access to nutrition, theoretically to the weight room. They'll be still doing, OTA-type workouts and walkthroughs and that sort of thing. This doesn't mean they're all just banished. And the other part of that that's a little bit paternalistic is, well, our campus is so much better than your terrible home life, son. You better just stay here. You know, that may be the case for some, but it's a pretty big assumption that that's the case for everybody. So I am not buying that argument.
I actually do. I think it's if we look at, we're talking big time football, which is what we're talking about here. I don't think anyone would, and it's not necessarily just where you're living, but where you're training, right? If you're a college athlete, you're 20 years old, you're at home. Do we think they're not going to go out and lift weights? And who has better facilities than college football programs? They don't exist on Earth. NFL teams don't have the facility, with the exception of the Cowboys, don't have the facilities that college teams have. So I would disagree with you from that perspective. I do know what you're talking about in terms of your dorm life. Sometimes dudes just live together, and it's not pretty. Whereas plenty of people come from reasonable backgrounds. Not everybody comes from dire poverty. Pat Forty joining us, 40-yard dash, of course, which you can now read in Sports Illustrated. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Do you believe college basketball can begin in bubbles?
I mean, a lot of logistical hurdles. It's an intriguing concept. I will say, you know, to Dan Gavitt's credit, unlike I think a lot of the college football leaders, he's been working on this, and he's been getting ahead of this and coming up with all kinds of ideas and scenarios, whereas I think college football, the whole strategy was basically, well, let's just hope it works out okay. And then you get to August, like, things aren't working out okay. Now what do we do? But they're trying in basketball to find whatever ways they can. You know, it's certainly easier than it would be in football. I'd love to see an actual, like, written detailed plan and be able to read it and say, oh yeah, that's all going to work. Or at least have people, and I'm sure they've done this, have them troubleshoot the plans and say, you know, find the holes in it and what could work and not work. But everything should be at least on the table to try at this point.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So I look at this thing and I wonder where we are, the relationship between reporters, many of whom, who, you know, like yourself, like you actually have athletes in your background, And I wonder what the relationship between sports and reporters is like going forward when many of them operate under the assumption that you guys don't want college football?
Yes, my favorite topic. Because, A, it's not like it's not like my job depends on it. It's not like I like it, and I have watched college football since I was 5 years old and love the fall for that reason. It's not like I have kids who are college athletes and would like to see them be able to have their seasons. No. This is all some diabolical political plot that is much more important than any of that. Because sports writers are so influential, Doug, so unbelievably influential. You know, I think we're going to tip the balance in the election. I don't think there's any doubt about that. No, this is all so stupid to me. It's tiresome, and it's amazing how such a completely logically threadbare argument can get so much traction, because I hear it every hour of every day. I hate to tell those people it's not true. I would love for there to be football. I just want to make sure it is safe and the right thing to do.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Pat Forte is our guest. Then there's the juxtaposition of some schools have kids back on campus, you know, and they even have intramurals at some of these Big Ten, and they're not having football. Like, that part is crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I mean, at all. The holes in logic in some of the places I don't get. You know, again, I can speak for what it's like at some places on the West Coast, and it's super restrictive. I mean, they aren't doing much of anything, including going to class on campus. So, you know, the restrictions that I have seen make a lot of sense. That sort of thing makes no sense to me. It's completely inconsistent to me to say, yeah, go play football, touch football with all of your friends, but no, we can't play tackle football over here.
Pat, great stuff, man. Last thing. You said it's tenuous. You said it's day-to-day. If you were a betting man, would you bet we have football in September?
That's interesting. On Tuesday, I said 51% yes, 49% no. I ticked it up one percentage Wednesday, one percentage Thursday, up to 53%. But now, gosh, I'm already hearing reports about, you know, with students coming back to campus, that there's issues already at some of the large state universities. There's player unrest at additional universities. I'm going to knock it back down to 49% right now and say it's 1-2% more likely we do not have football than we do.
Pat Forte, 40-yard dash, Sports Illustrated. Check him out on Twitter as well. Pat, thanks so much for joining us. Great perspective. Always appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
My pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. Will we get a single college football game this fall? That part of Game Time next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Game time!
This Fire. Is Game Time.
It's Game Time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Representative Beyer of...
Dan Beyer, what do you got, my friend?
Doug, today the game is...
Psychic.
All right, Psychic. Seven scenarios for you to predict in the future. And we'll start, I guess, in a continuation of your conversation with Pat Forte of SI. Will the ACC, Big 12, or SEC cancel their football seasons before they even begin?
No, they're going to play football. I mean, like, look, it's an absolute contradiction for Ohio State, you know, enrolls tens of thousands of students on campus, dorms, frats, sororities, house parties, dining halls, right? They have 60,000 students, but 150 football players can't be quarantined and can't be healthy enough to play. Like, I think the SEC knows they don't want what was thought to be a contradiction. Well, it's thought to be a contradiction will college athletes be back on campus and everybody else not being back on campus. Now, many of these campuses are open for business, and it's actually a contradiction to not have football if it's safe enough for students to actually be there.
Okay, Psychic, if the Big Ten and Pac-12 both play football in the spring, will there be a spring Rose Bowl?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. And roses bloom in spring. Not sure if you're aware of that.
That's...
I studied horticulture at Chico State. University.
The Rose Bowl was scheduled to be one of the semifinals, or is scheduled to be. I guess they haven't changed that yet for the college football playoff. But I was, you know, I think that there could be a possibility if you do have that, you might as well give those teams something to play for in the spring. And, you know, why not have it on, you know, May 1 or, you know, June 1st or something.
Pretty
like
amazing.
That. Yeah.
Kind of cool, actually.
All right, let's talk some NBA hoops. How many games will the Blazers Grizzlies play-in series go? One or two games?
Two.
Interesting.
Two. I mean, like, look, Portland's good and they're, you know, Damian Lillard's carrying them, but the idea that he can carry them every game, they have the gas in the tank. Grizzlies a young team. I think Portland's better than the Grizzlies, but I think the idea that they'll be able to dial it right up. And I do think that if you're Portland, you know, on some level, the mindset's got to be, look, we only got to win one out of two. If we're down in game one and we don't have it, let's rest our dudes and just take care of business when we have to.
You know, for as great as the season for the Grizzlies has been, they also lost Jaren Jackson in the bubble.
Right.
So they're maybe not the same Memphis team. All right, Psychic, who will end up winning the NBA bubble MVP?
Damian Lillard.
No, you think it's Lillard?
Yeah, it should be, you know, it should be, there's like three or four dudes,
yeah,
right?
Booker, Luka,
yeah,
Lillard, TJ Warren,
right? But because Portland is going to, looks like they're going to make the playoffs, and they weren't previously, because he had 61 and 51 back-to-back games, I think those are the two reasons why.
All right, Psychic, who will win the bubble coach of the year in the NBA?
Bubble coach. Oh, Monty Williams.
No doubt. 8-0. There's not much you can change with that. All right. Some more coaching news in the NBA. Psychic, who will be the next coach of the Brooklyn Nets?
I think Jock Vaughn will be the coach.
All right. Putting that team together. It is amazing the amount of guys that they don't have, and to see them put together what they did.
Well, also remember, he's a former Spurs assistant. Sean Marks is a former Spur. So they actually, you know, kind of fit in terms of the same basketball family. And, you know, they're just, tell me the guy who's out there who you feel like you know is going to win there.
Sure. I mean, when you look at, you know, without, obviously, you know, as you touched off, without Kyrie, without Durant, there's no DeAndre Jordan, no Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, it's pretty amazing that the Nets have been competitive, or as competitive as they are. All right, final one. Will the St. Louis Cardinals have to play a triple header this season? Because they've got 11 double headers on their schedule. They'll resume play tomorrow. Do you see a triple header possibly in the future for the St. Louis Cardinals?
Yeah, why not?
That would be amazing.
But remember, they're only seven innings long, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that'd be 21 innings. Maybe they'll just make 3 5-inning games, and that's how.
What if we had 4 4-inning games and then a 7-inning game, and we got 5 done in one day? What do you think about that?
Oh, Doug, you know, one of my favorite video games as a kid, it wasn't a popular one, but do you remember when Little League Baseball was made?
Sure.
Yes, that game was so awesome, and it was, you know, 6 innings. It was so much fun because it was only 6 innings, and why not give it a shot if you're Major League Baseball, and that's game time.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Oh, that was a good game time. Byer, I gotta, like, listen, it's a Friday, super hot outside.
Super hot.
Ryan's taking a little break and going, you guys, do you have a plan for where you're going?
We thought we
you going
just,
in my. Do you want to take my Mazda?
We just.
Why don't
we
take my Mazda?
No kidding.
I'm serious. Why don't you take my Mazda? That's the whole campaign.
Yeah.
We'll get back on the road.
Yeah,
Mazda.
Back on the road.
CX-30.
Yeah, we are. We're just gonna drive until the road ends. No, we're
at the end of the flat Earth. And Kyrie.
Exactly. Just go right off the edge of it. Tomorrow morning we leave. We're gonna stop in Bryce Canyon. And then Sunday morning, make the rest of the drive out to a cabin we are renting in.
Just the two of you?
Her family as well.
Okay. Is there a boat? Are you guys just going to a cabin?
Going to a cabin. There will be kayaking.
Yeah, I like that.
Lots of hiking and potentially a day trip to Yellowstone.
Okay. All right. I like that. That's good. Yeah. Day trip to Yellowstone. What do you do when you go to Yellowstone?
Well, I'm
like on a day trip.
Well, that's why. So we're hoping to be able to go and actually walk around. There are some stories about how, much like us, because of the limited activities you can do, mm-hmm. it seems to be what a lot of other people in the country are doing. So hopefully it's not too crowded and we can get in and do what we'd like to do and walk around and do some hikes. But yeah, we'll see.
You know, it's interesting. I've determined what I want to do. But we may wait till early fall. Is I want to go whitewater rafting with my kids. Have you ever gone whitewater rafting?
Have not.
Byer, have you ever done it?
No,
me neither. Really want to do it, but it
sounds like
a new,
fun. I'd definitely be open to doing it.
I got to determine. You know, do I bring all three kids? And here's the thing. So Hayes is an easy sale, right? Like he's a he and I have already been like Googling online. He's easy. He, you know, nothing affects him. Harper, who would be down for, would be cool, but she's allergic to cold water. She actually has forget the name. You can look it up what the allergy is. So she can break out in hives. Although I'm not sure how cold it actually is right now. If you're
it stays cold year round.
Right, but I don't know how it would affect her if it's splashing on her. Otherwise, like she'd have to literally wear a wetsuit because she can go into shock if she has too much of an allergic reaction. And then Grace, who I think would dig it, we go paddleboarding. I paddleboard and she fishes, and she'll paddleboard to help us kind of get us in. We do that all the time. But just the amount of complaining that would take place on the way to really is the big thing. And so you're almost like, do I want to go do this by myself? I don't want to just take my son and do it, although I kind of do it, right? Or do I take all three, you know, which one of the all three kids do you do? I don't know. Whitewater rafting is what I want to do. I do want to kind of go on some of those hikes. But I like toys. I would love... If anybody has a boat and jet skis, let me know. I'll throw my kids into Mazda and we'll go. So, Byer, you got big plans this weekend? You got your Sunday show? You playing golf?
Sunday show. It's going to be super hot. I'm going to try at least to get to the range for a little bit. But
we've done the range 3 days in a row. We did the range, played, and then the range. I'm telling you, man, played 18 holes with my son and my buddy Craig and Wadler and his son. And it was amazing. Really, really amazing.
Where'd you play?
Brentwood Country Club.
Ooh, all right.
I'm not a member. I'm not even sure. Of course he's a member. John Middlecoff joins the show coming next. Are tight ends finally getting the respect they deserve? Plus, what's the real reason Brady wanted out of New England? Find out next.